Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Let me start here. Quote, no way. No bleeping way. No way and no bleeping way. The first one was Derek Carr. The second one was Bruce Irvin. And they were the tweets that were in response to the news that Khalil Mack had been traded on Saturday. No way and no bleeping way. Well, actually, yes way. And the longer the Mack saga dragged on, the more likely that it was going to end like this, with Oakland trading Khalil Mack, a generational player, for draft picks because they did not want to pay him. Actually, strike that. With John Gruden trading Khalil Mack, a generational player, for draft picks because Gruden didn't want to pay him. And make no mistake, that's why Mack is a Bear right now. Not because Gruden couldn't pay him, but because Gruden didn't want to pay him. He could have. He didn't want to. The Bears were able to get a deal done with Mack in under 24 hours. The Rams got their deal done with Aaron Donald. So Gruden could have gotten a deal done if he wanted to, but he didn't want to. If Gruden really wanted Mack, he'd be a Raider right now, but he's not because Gruden did not want him. Because that's what this came down to. This was not an organizational decision. This, from all appearances, was a John Gruden decision. And for some reason, his decision was to treat the Raiders like prison. You know, walk right in, punch the baddest dude right in the face. The only problem with that is, in this case, the baddest dude is also your best defensive player and a team captain and a guy that was loved in that locker room. Well, in the very least, at least they got two first-round picks for him. No, they didn't, because that deal was Khalil Mack and a second-round pick and a conditional fifth-rounder for two first-round picks, a third and a sixth. Because one of your best defensive players ever, a future Hall of Famer in his prime, was not enough. You had to throw in a second rounder to get the Bears to take him off your hands too. So don't tell me it's a great deal because they got two first rounders in exchange, because they didn't. Not when they're shipping him out with a second. I mean, hell, I'm shocked that Gruden didn't tell the Bears, hey, you know, you guys are doing a real, real solid. You guys are doing us a real solid by taking this Hall of Famer off our hands in his prime. Hey, you guys want Derek Carr too? I'll throw him in just to make sure y'all win this trade. Because make no mistake, you can wait if you want. I'm not going to. Chicago won the trade. How do I know they won the Khalil Mack trade? Because they have Khalil Mack after the Khalil Mack trade. Raider fans are pissed. Raider players appear to be pissed. But you know who's not pissed? Phillip Rivers, Patrick Mahomes, and Case Keenum. Because they know they're not going to have to face Khalil Mack twice a year. Taking your best defensive weapon and trading him away right before the start of the season is awesome. Well, for everybody else in your division. Seems to me the only way the Raiders have any chance of salvaging their dignity in this deal is to draft two Khalil Macks. And good luck with that. And knowing Gruden, if they do, he'll probably just trade Khalil Mack the second and Khalil Mack the third. Now, here's the crazy thing. Like, you can defend this trade on some level. You can argue that you're going to win with depth on defense and that you don't want to sink that much money into a single player. And that as great as Mack was, the Raiders' defense was pretty crappy. I mean, I'll listen to that. It's kind of defensible on that level, but that's not how Gruden handled it. The only thing richer than Gruden trading Khalil Mack is Gruden's claim that it was not his call.
They're trying to divide us. People are trying to divide us, and I wanted him gone. He wanted him here. You know, we made a decision as an organization. Mark Davis, Tom Delaney, we all got the information, and we made a decision together. And I'll just say what he said. I read what he said yesterday. It's a decision that we all came to.
A decision that we all came to. A decision that we all came to. Yeah, well, there was a standoff though, right? You said so. A standoff because according to reports, you really didn't talk to the player at all. Again, if you wanted the player, you would have gotten that deal done. Because clearly you're the guy calling all the shots. You're the guy running the show. So stop acting like this was some sort of organizational decision, because it wasn't. It was your decision. You could have salvaged that relationship, but clearly you were hell-bent on blowing it up. Great. Fine. You're the guy making $10 million a year. You're the guy with the 10-year contract. Just own it and don't act like it was an organizational decision. Because you don't end a standoff by blowing everything up. You could have negotiated a new deal for one of the best players in football. There was always that option, but you didn't do it. And according to Gruden, once Aaron Donald signed his deal for $87 million guaranteed, there was never going to be a deal with Khalil Mack.
And you know, $90 million guaranteed is an astronomical number. It's phenomenal, I think, for the players. Great for him, obviously, but that was something we could not do.
That's pretty rich. Pretty rich for a guy making $100 million to say that $90 million is an astronomical number and not something that we can do. I mean, it's pretty amazing that he said that. I'll tell you what else is amazing. This whole thing about them being united and not divided. Gruden was asked if he felt like he had to include the second round pick. Here's what he said.
I really wasn't involved in all of that, you know, so you have to ask Reggie, to be honest with you.
Whoa, wait, what? I thought you were united. I thought that you were not divided. You'd have to ask Reggie about that because you were not involved? In other words, don't blame me for that second round pick. So, he was involved and they were united, or he wasn't involved and they're divided. Or he's involved with all the good stuff, but not involved with the bad stuff that comes back to bite them. I mean, which is it, Chuck? Because it can't be both. And how can you say you and Reggie McKenzie are on the same page when you ran him under the bus and then backed over him several times? I mean, this dude could not be talking out of both sides of his mouth any more than he is right now. Yeah, I know. He wants to remake the team. That was always going to happen. This is what happens when you give John Gruden $100 million. You give John Gruden the hammer. And the $100 million man is going to do what the $100 million man wants to do. You're not paying the former Hooters spokesman just to get up there and make faces. And yes, I get that the Oakland defense was not good last year. So maybe you make the argument that they weren't good with Mack and they won't be much worse without Mack. And maybe he turns those two first-rounders into something special. Maybe, except the Mack trade was not the only amazing move the Raiders pulled off over the weekend. Do you remember Martavis Bryant, the guy they sent a third-round pick to Pittsburgh for during this year's draft? Yeah, well, they cut him. They cut him. That worked out pretty well. And by working out pretty well, I mean Gruden got worked by the Steelers in that deal. In other words, it's not like Chucky has proven himself to be some draft wizard so far. And now that guy is suddenly going to strike it rich, repeatedly, with draft picks. Collecting draft picks is not enough. You have to know how to use them. So, it's Gruden's team, that was Gruden's trade, and it's his explanation that doesn't make a ton of sense. This guy's cooking the meals, he's buying the groceries, he's growing the food, it's all on him. If it works, he can laugh at everybody, and if it doesn't, he sank himself before he even coached a game. Raider fan, just do not expect very much from your team this year. Because it's clear, Gruden doesn't. But if you're going to make that move, you better be able to explain that move to your fans and to the guys in that locker room. And watching Gruden over the weekend, he didn't.
You have to ask Reggie.
You'd have to ask Reggie.
And you know,
that's Raider Mike if you need him. Which one is it? We are united? Or, oh, that second round pick, that's not on me. You'd have to ask Reggie.
You have to ask Reggie.
My guest is Brian Dawkins. Brian, really nice to have you back on the program. How are you?
Yeah, what's up, brother? How's everything?
Good. Doc, how about you? How are things?
I'm blessed, brother. Absolutely
all right.
Blessed.
Good to hear it. Listen, you've had a few weeks for it to set in. I'm curious, how does it feel to know now that for the rest of your life, Brian, you will be introduced as a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame?
Yeah. You know what? I'm not used to people wearing my jersey. So, like, just to have people mention me and say that, you know, forever I'll be a Hall of Famer is still something that's just something that has not set in. I don't ever think it will, to be honest with you.
You know, I wonder if it hasn't sunk in yet. I mean, I've had one Hall of Famer after another say that they were ecstatic when they found out they were getting in, but they could barely put into words what it was like actually being inducted into Canton. What about the experience there? You're up there on stage. You're being presented by Troy Vincent and Patrick Sapp. You're getting your gold jacket. What was it like to be inducted or included in such an elite group in that manner?
Well, I think, you know, being blessed to be around those individuals and, you know, how much they've done for the game of football and how much some of them meant to me because I looked up two of them the way that I played the games, you know, especially Ronnie Lott. You know, that was tremendous to be on stage and to be appear with them now. The thing that I would tell you that I had the most on that stage feeling-wise was just how thankful I was and how much I wanted to make sure that I blessed as many people as possible with that same feeling that I had and how thankful I was for them being in my life to help me at different stages of my life to become that dude that you saw on stage giving that speech. Because without those individuals caring for me and seeing things in me that I did not see in myself at different times in my life, I would not have been on that stage. And so, like, I was so intent on speaking from my heart and really pouring out how thankful I was that I've been blessed by so many different individuals.
You have to check out my bookie. Remember this, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. This is why I tell my people to bet with my bookie. It's no longer about getting your bet down before the game. My bookie is all about in-game wagering. Trust me, they are the best bet this season. They've been in business for years. They have great reviews online, and their mobile site is very easy to navigate. Lay down some cash, win big right now. I would only recommend a service to my listeners that's been good to me. This is why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. And they have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business. And for you fantasy guys out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use the promo code ROME to activate that offer. A dollar for dollar match on your deposit? That is some serious ROI before you even hit the digital window. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. Do not forget to use the promo code ROME when creating your account to get that bonus. You play, you win, you get paid. Hall of Famer Brian Dawkins, my guest. He's appearing today on behalf of Verizon and the Verizon Up program, which we'll get to momentarily. You know, Brian, you mentioned a number of people. Let me ask you about a couple of people in particular. One of the people you did mention was your former defensive coordinator, the late Jim Johnson. What did he mean to you as a player and as a person?
Man, Jim was a go-getter, first of all. I mean, let's just say there's a reason why he's never been mic'd during games because right. They would be beeping the whole time because of the words that he chose to use from time to time. But he was such a intense individual. He was so detail oriented when it came to the things that we needed to do to have success with his blitzes and breaking down protections. But those are football things, right? The things that he taught me that I learned from him is just how much he trusted the abilities that I had been given. He created plays and created blitzes for me to kind of exploit offenses and for the defense to go through a safety. A lot of times it did go through me was something unheard of at the time. So I believe, you know, he doesn't get the due respect that he deserves as far as the way that the safety position is played today. Now, people, they'll talk about, you know, Ed and phenomenal talent. They'll talk about Troy, phenomenal talent. But before then, like, Jim was doing things with me, to me, that opened up the avenue for other guys other teams to see the benefits of having a guy who's a playmaker at that position.
Hall of Famer Brian Dawkins sharing his thoughts with us. You know, Brian, when you look at that, and then I would even add to it, you know, from a football standpoint, there's that. And then the one person who probably, who you gave more credit to and love was your wife, Connie. And I bring this up because earlier this summer, you and Connie shared your story and some of the challenges that you faced, including depression. It seems to me telling the world something like that takes a lot of courage. Why was that something that you wanted to share?
Well, in my time of being off the field now, of having discussions with other people, I recognize how much that type of help is needed in this world. Not just has nothing, it has, I won't say nothing to do with football, but it doesn't, it's not a football thing. It's a issue that we as people deal with. And me being and having the platform that I was blessed to have, I just felt, you know, the Lord telling me to make sure that I'm very open and honest and transparent with the things that I've come through, that are things that I've gone through. I'm on the other side of it, like I said in my speech. But that'll be something that I will forever fight. It'll always be there. And so it will be something that I will always have to conquer with my positive thinking and the way that I talk to myself about things. And so if here I am having the life that people think that I have, going through what I've gone through, then, you know, if you are not where I am, or even if you are where I am, there's still the possibility of you having success after you go through the things that you're going through. So that encouragement, I will tell you that. So I've gotten so many DMs on my social media account from so many different people that have talked about how that blessed them, you know, blessed them. Many of them talking about how it stopped them from doing something. So, like, that's powerful. That has, and again, that has nothing to do with football. That has nothing to do with football. That has to do with life.
Brian Dawkins joining us. It's got to feel great also that you could share that message and have that kind of impact and have people react that way. Brian, I've got to ask, you were part of some amazing defenses, special defenses in Philadelphia. Andy Reid made it clear that you were, quote, the heartbeat of that defense. What's it mean for you to hear that? And then how did you approach your job knowing that?
Well, it makes me feel great that you know, what I did meant something to everybody that I came in contact with. And I tried my best to make sure that I performed in such a way as to never let my teammates down. I said that on stage. But I intentionally went about living my life to make sure that I represented myself in that way, that I can always be counted on, that I was going to be where I needed to be, that I was not going to, they would never get a late night phone call about me doing something stupid in the streets, that, you know, I was going to go home to my family, be the man that I'm supposed to be in my household, to be an example. I was living my life for my kids, to be a representation of my household, but at the same time, I was also doing it to be a representation of my family at work, to make sure that, again, if they needed an example of how you can do something and do something different, you don't have to do what everybody's doing, you can actually do things a different way. I wanted to be that example. So, like, I put a lot of pressure on myself to live my life a certain way, to live my life on purpose and purposefully bless others with the way that I lived it.
Well, famer Brian Dawkins joining us again. Now, Brian, you're working with Verizon and the Verizon Up program. What's that all about, and what are you doing with those folks?
Yeah, so, you know, I just was talking about, you know, some of the things that I've been blessed to do. And what Verizon, I believe, has done is giving people who join up on Verizon Up, you have to go to My Verizon app to check it out, is they're giving you the opportunity to create memories. Memories you probably would not be able to do had you not signed up there. So, you know, for instance, you know, this week people will be able to meet me. They'll be able to meet a couple of other Eagles legends and Brett Celek, and they'll actually be able to play flag football with Randall Cunningham. So that's things that you wouldn't be able to encounter had you not signed up. But it's not just that. There's other things that you can gain. If you go to that app, that site, you'll see the other things that you can do. But I just think that if you love football the way that I love it, this will give you an opportunity to experience things that you probably would not had you not signed up.
That's good time. I appreciate that, too. Hey, Doc, one last thing. I've had one defensive player on after another, especially safeties and linebackers, tell me that they don't know what will and will not be flagged with the new helmet rule. and they feel like the game they love is changing. As a final thought, when you see that and you see the Raiders trade an elite defensive player like Khalil Mack, what do you think? Does it feel like defense is now being devalued?
Well, I think, Dominic, you're honest with yourself. It's been that way for a while. The rules are such that they won't put points on the board. It is what it is. And that's why you can't touch a receiver down the field. That has nothing to do with getting hurt. That has to do with points on the board. Okay, we understand that. The problem that I have with the rules is that there's so much leaning towards defense. Like, if you're on the defensive side of it, like, if I'm growing up, why would I want to play defense? Let everybody play offense and let's have the score be 100 to 100. Because obviously that's what they want. Because you're not telling me how I can go about doing something that's impossible to do. Now, I understand you're trying to take the head of the game, but if the helmet is then put in the game, into a play, but it's obvious to someone who knows the game that he's trying to avoid the hit, and it turns out to be helmet to helmet, that should not be fine. Because you can see the dude making the attempt, but he's still fine. He could be suspended. So, like, now a guy, I'm just going to cut a dude. So now you cut a dude, you tear his knee up like we saw in preseason. Oh, he didn't have to do that. Well, if I hit him high, I'm getting fined. If I hit him low, I'm getting fined. So, like, they have to make up their mind and really step out of the corporate room in some instances to see that, okay, yes, we're trying to make the game safer. We were stringent with this rule in the beginning. This is how it's softened up. So here's my hope. I hope that they've been this hard during the preseason, and as the season goes on, they won't be as stringent on the rule. Because I've seen it in the past. There's pass interference. We're going to be very hard on it this year. So they call every call in preseason. All of a sudden during the season, it slows down as the games go. You go to week 1, 2, 3. And they're calling quite a few of them, but as the year goes on, especially into the playoffs, they don't call as much. I hope they're going to do the same thing with this, that the intent is you need to do better with taking your head out, to have guys be more conscious of it, and then they don't call it as much.
I hope so, too. I'm glad I asked. 5-time All-Pro, 9-time Pro Bowler, a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and today appearing on behalf of Verizon and the Verizon Up program. Brian Dawkins, my guest. Doc, so good to get caught up. I appreciate you. Congrats on the induction, and really nice to have you on the show, Brian.
Absolutely, brother. Appreciate you, man.
Notre Dame, 24. Michigan, 17. And Michigan men, if you're still wondering who's got it better than us... You can add Notre Dame to that list. Because stop me if you've heard this one before. Jim Harbaugh lost another big game with Michigan. He's now 1-5 against Ohio State and Michigan State. He's now 0-1 against Notre Dame. There was no bigger stage in college football than the one in South Bend on Saturday night. And there was no bigger no-show than there was that night. And did I say this would-be savior is now 1-6 against his biggest rivals? Listen, I'm not going to bury these guys after 1 week. Notre Dame looked good. Hell, they might be really good. But you can give Notre Dame some freaking credit and still wonder what the hell was going on with Michigan. Because after an offseason where just about everybody was hyping Michigan and expecting enormous things from the Wolverines, they go out there and they get fed to the freaking wood chipper. That brand new offense looked just as terrible as the old one. That alleged world-class defense allowed touchdowns on its first two drives. They were getting carved. That five-star transfer QB played just like the dudes that Harbaugh already ran out of town. And the coach, who was supposed to be a difference maker and a savior, and the prodigal son returning, just got turned inside out by Brian Kelly. Listen, Michigan, man, if you're being real about this, I know I'm not saying anything that you don't already know if you're being real about this. They didn't pay this guy all sorts of crazy jack to wear cardboard khakis and to smash Rutgers. They brought him to Ann Arbor to bring back the glory days, not the Rich Rod days. But this is where we are. your man, your savior, is 9-9 over his last 18. He's lost four straight. That's the first time that's happened in Ann Arbor in nearly a decade. Even more damning, he's 0-6 as an underdog. You get paid to not only beat your rivals, which he's not doing, you get paid, the kind of money he's getting paid, to win games that you're not supposed to win. And that has happened exactly zero times since Harbaugh came to town. I mean, I could come out here and I could smash this guy, but I don't have to, because former Michigan All-American Braylon Edwards is doing it for me. The current Big Ten network football analyst is now the indefinitely suspended Big Ten network football analyst because of the absolute lava that he was spewing from his Twitter feed about this one. Check out the following deleted tweets. Quote, Ruiz is weak. Line is weak. Shea is scared. Bleeping Michigan offense is so predictable. Michigan football is sadly one thing. Trash. Come on, Michigan. Really? Running backs, running routes, and QBs will be good? I'm done. He went on, and I quote, LOL, everybody had your back. I got to laugh because I knew this would happen. Don't feel bad. Watch the truth. End of quote. And again, you don't need me piling on. Not when you've got Braylon dropping lines like this one, too. Quote, Michigan football is sadly one thing, trash. See, that's the kind of fire that you cannot load back into the cannon. And even after he was suspended, it wasn't like Braylon was about to walk it back either. Here's what he told the Detroit News. Quote, was the original tweet a little excessive? I admit I was excessive. And emotional and inebriated. Mix those together, but the focus of my tweets remains intact. I stand by that. I'm a man. We make mistakes. I'm sorry. I should not have gone that way. I still agree with the overall message, but I apologize. I shouldn't name individual players. They're still kids. That's what I apologize for. End quote. That's an amazing quote. It really is. I mean, what do I always say? Don't tweet angry. Don't tweet drunk. And Braylon did both. Then again, watching Harbaugh and Michigan no show in another big game is going to make any Michigan fan pissed. Make any Michigan fan want to drink. And that's exactly what he was and what he did. And he apologized for it. Well, he apologized for hammering college kids. And he should. And he should. I don't crack on college kids. They're not paid. Well, most of them are not paid. Some of them are not paid. They're college kids, though, right? It's bad form. You don't do that. But notice the guy did not come off the general message. And his general message that he was not taking back is Michigan football is trash.
Totally trash.
Mm-hmm.
Totally trash.
That's Braylon. That's not me. I didn't say that. I would never say that. But then again, I don't need to say that because one of the great Michigan men said it for me. All right, again, this is not a media member. This is not one of the fans. This is not somebody on a message board. This is a former All-American who played ball there. So that's where we are, Michigan men. Four quarters into the season, and one of your all-time greats is getting ripped off the Big Ten Network. And after he's had some time to sober up and think about exactly what he tweeted, he's only sorry for naming names and not for what he actually said. Yeah, and I know. Only one game. Long season. It's going to be a long season. You're right. It's going to be a really long season if Harbaugh does not get right quickly. Because it's not going to get easier as you go ahead. You still have Wisconsin, Michigan State, Penn State, Ohio State. They're still waiting. And after getting exposed in South Bend, there is no margin for error now. Time to win the big one, Jimmy. Get ready or get run. Put up or shut up because you are not delivering. Coach them up, Jim, because contrary to what you think, it's not just the media who's coming for you. It is your own Michigan family. And it's not just the fans, but it's former All-Americans. Coach them up, Jimbo. Coach them up. Patrick Peterson is my guest. Patrick, great to have you back. Good morning. How are you?
Hey, what's up, Jim? Good to be back.
Great to have you back, Patrick. Thanks so much. So you're entering your eighth season. You tell me, from the outside, it seems like you have not slowed down and you're still attacking it like you're a rookie. Does it feel that way to you?
It definitely feels that way. You know, for the most part, the body is in great shape. The mind is getting sharper, you know, as I get older, learning to put myself in better position now, especially in this scheme of defense that I'm able to play in now. So I definitely feel like I'm still 22 years old, but time is definitely not waiting on no one. I just want to continue doing the great things I've been doing to keep the body in tip-top shape.
Patrick Peterson joining us. You mentioned the defense and the way that's going. I'll get to that in a minute. You know, in terms of your approach, though, you've always been a leader on that team, but now that you're one of the longest tenured players on the team, how do you approach your role as a leader and leading from the front?
Well, you know, for the most part, I always wanted to lead by an example, by my play. Let that speak more than anything. But also, you know, just letting guys understand what it takes to not only be a great player, but how to be a pro. You know, because that's what helps you last in this league is doing all the little things correct and making sure that you're in tune with your body and getting the proper rest and things like that. So I lead guys in that way as well. So just, you know, just lead by an example and just teaching and showing guys how to keep their bodies in, you know, in the right shape so that they can perform at its best level.
Arizona Cardinals cornerback Patrick Peterson joining us today. So, Patrick, the season also is a little bit different in the sense that you've got a new head coach in Steve Wilks. Now that you've had some time with him and his scheme, what kind of thoughts do you have?
Oh, man, I mean, we've been having a great time so far in preseason. I believe we're starting to build our identity by being some thieves and takers on defense. You know, that's we've been very stingy in the preseason. We want to carry that over into the regular season, but being able to spend time with Coach Wilks and just pick his brain here and there, just giving me nuggets here and there on how to be more aggressive on creating turnovers, how to punch the ball out, and things of that nature, putting my eyes in right positions. It's been phenomenal, and it's great to have a defensive-minded coach as a head coach because now you know, he can sneak in our room every once in a while and give us nuggets versus, you know, babysitting the offense.
Damn right. Hey, listen, I understand this notion of being a thief and a taker, except if they don't throw your way, it's kind of hard to take anything from anybody. And I bring that up because, according to Pro Football Focus, you saw the fewest targets and allowed the fewest receptions of any corner last year. So do you take that as a sign of respect, or is it frustrating that opposing teams are not challenging you?
You know, at times it is frustrating. And, you know, at times I see it as respect, but, you know, I wanna have opportunity to make those plays. But if obviously if offenses don't feel it's in their best, you know, opportunity or the best wishes to come my way, they're not going to do it. So, you know, I wish I wasn't so good.
Right.
But at the end of the day, I just want to just the team doing the things that, you know, to help my team be successful. Put my team in a position to win ball games because at the end of the day, our team goal is to get to the playoffs first and foremost, and lastly is to win a trophy. So whatever I can do to put a helping hand into that, I'm all for it.
Spending some time with Patrick Peterson this morning, you said earlier this summer that Josh Rosen, quote, blew my mind in his first week that you were practicing with him. Listen, that's really, really high praise coming from somebody like you. What was it about him or is it about him that makes him special?
Just the way he carries himself, he has a different zip on his ball. You can just tell that he was born to throw the pigskin, you know, just the way his motion is, the way he's able to read the field, the way he's able to put the ball in tight windows, as you guys were able to see as he put that on display against the Saints and the Chargers. I don't think he played against the Cowboys, but you can tell that the potential and the ability is there. You know, I just can't wait for his opportunity presents itself to see what he's really going to do because you can tell that he really cares about his game and really cares about, you know, being a great. And, you know, he's put forward the work each and every day to do that.
We're talking to Patrick Peterson. You know, I love talking to you about the one-on-one matchups and the guys who challenge you the most. I could pick any number of guys. Doug Baldwin said something really interesting. He says he can't point to one thing that you do better than anything else, which makes you so tough because there's not a weakness that he can point to at all. So if I were to turn that thing around, if I were to ask you, Patrick, what do you think is the one thing that you do better than anybody else, something you really pride yourself on, how would you respond?
I'll probably say my press cut, my press technique. I really take pride in that, the farther the line of scrimmage, making sure I keep my shoulders square, disrupting the timing between the quarterback and the receiver. You know, most receivers have problems getting around around a defensive back that's able to stay patient at the line of scrimmage and keep his shoulders square, almost like, you know, how Darrell Revis had it in, you know, that 2006-2007 stint he had in Chicago with the Jets, and, you know, that Revis Island was created. You know, he was one of the more patient corners at the line of scrimmage, and you know, watching his game and, you know, seeing some of the things he did, I kind of wanted to put that in my game as well. So my press technique, I probably say the best in the league for sure.
All right, so having said that, because you've spent so much time in the league, what is it that separates the great players from everybody else? I mean, is it technique, is it talent, or is it preparation?
I think it's a little bit of all three. And obviously you have to be able to, you know, be durable, be able to, you know, to be on the field, you know, when it's time to play. You know, you don't want to be, you know, on the sideline or, you know, in street clothes on a Sunday. You know, obviously you want to do whatever you need to do to make sure you're there for your team. And obviously preparation is a big component in it. Athletic ability, talent, all that stuff, you know, combined into one makes a great defensive back. And, you know, it's a lot of us out there now. We just have to make sure that who can sustain that level of greatness for the longest.
So let me ask a couple of really quick things before I let you go. In terms of sustaining that greatness, how much then, Patrick, is the ring the thing for you? In other words, is it enough to keep having amazing seasons like you're having, or do you feel like there's going to be some unfinished business if you don't get a Super Bowl ring before you're done?
I definitely would think it's some unfinished business, you know, if I don't win the ultimate goal and that's the Super Bowl. But at the end of the day, I understand that that's a team goal. You know, that's a team achievement. I'm sorry. And at the end of the day, that means our team wasn't good enough to win the Super Bowl. You know, and I want to make sure I do whatever. I leave it all on the field, leave it all in the meeting room, leave it all on the practice field to make sure that we don't short ourselves. That's the beauty of the game, is making sure you do whatever you need to do to put yourself in position to get there. You know, and if you don't, you want to keep fighting and keep trying to get there. And obviously, if you don't, you know you did everything that you could to put yourself in position. So there won't be no hard feelings. It will definitely be some unfinished business. But the product I put on the field on Sunday, so by me performing at a high level, me performing, putting those great seasons together, that's what matters the most to me. But because that ultimately drives into the team goal and drives into the team success.
All right, so let me go full circle on you. You mentioned the defense, the way it's played right now, and the way the game is called. If we take a step back and we look at the league as a whole, the quarterbacks obviously are getting some really big contracts, and it's only now that guys like Aaron Donald and Khalil Mack are getting paid as well. Overall, though, if you look at the way the money's being doled out, the quarterbacks are getting a whole lot more than elite defensive players. Do you feel like defense then is being devalued in the league?
I think, man, Aaron Donald and Khalil Mack definitely just raised the value of a defensive player. You know, it was a wave. It was a point to where, you know, where when I signed, it was, you know, 48. The next thing you know, Von came and signed for, you know, I think it was 60-something mil guaranteed. And J.J. Watt, and the number just going to continue to get higher and higher. So I believe the value of the defensive players are definitely getting there. Because these two young fellas that just signed these latest deals for defensive players have been unbelievable. So it's only going to be a matter of time when you continue to see, you know, major deals continue to get passed out on the defensive side as well.
As I mentioned, 7 Pro Bowls in 7 seasons and a 3-time first-team All-Pro. Arizona opening up against Washington on Sunday. Patrick Peterson, my guest. Patrick, I really appreciate the long visit. Great to have you back. Thanks so much.
No problem, man. Also, if you guys haven't noticed, man, we just changed our stadium name to State Farm. So State Farm is going to be rocking now. And like the slogan, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey, listen, I'm glad you brought that up really quickly. It's Tuesday of week one. How are you feeling right now, and how fired up are you to run out on the newly named State Farm Stadium Sunday?
Man, I can't wait. I'm actually heading into the facility right now to get me a light workout in, but can't wait to run out in front of our fans. We always have the amazing fans. We have the best fans in the NFL now that we have the newly named stadium, State Farm. It's going to be even more incredible. By leading the league in false starts, fans are just going to, and now adding this element with that red and white to the red sea is just going to be unbelievable. So can't wait to run out Sunday.
You got it. Glad you brought that up. Patrick, nice to have you back, man. Have a great weekend. We'll look forward to this weekend.
Bye, Jim. Thanks, bud.
So number one Alabama beats Louisville 51-14 Saturday night. Tua throws for a couple of touchdowns. He rushes for another one. Jalen Hurts completes 5 of his 9 passes for 70 yards. All in all, a pretty awesome way for the Crimson Tide to open up their season, especially given the number of guys that Nick Saban lost from last year's squad. So, why don't we go down to the field for a post-game interview between Maria Taylor and an unusually hyped Nick Saban. I haven't seen this guy this happy in a long time. Folks, go ahead, take it away.
What answers did you have about your quarterbacks after watching both of them play tonight?
Well, I still like both guys. I think both guys were good players. I think both guys can help our team. All right, so why do you continually try to get me to say something that doesn't respect one of them? I'm not going to. So quit asking.
I hear you.
Whoa, 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 whoa. First of all, thanks to ESPN for that. I mean, what the hell just happened? It all seemed like it was going so well. Nice, easy beatdown, 51-14. Nick seemed to be pretty happy about things. And all of a sudden, Nick Saban goes Nick Saban, and he does it mid-answer. Listen to this guy. Like from 0 to 60,000 in a matter of seconds. We were about 3 seconds from Saban ripping off his clothes and lighting himself on fire just to show how angry he was and how outrageous that question was. I mean, hold on. Let me get the exact words so you can see just how insane and how unprofessional this was. Now, brace yourself, because there's no way Nick Saban snaps unless the question really crosses the line. Maria Taylor says, and I quote, now, seriously, hold up for a minute. Are you ready for this? Make sure you get the kids out of the room because I'm about to read the question that made Saban snap. Here is the question. Quote, what answers did you have about your quarterbacks after watching both of them play tonight? End of question. Like, that's it. That's all there was. A reporter asked the coach, what answers do you have about your questions after watching both of them play tonight? And this guy's response is to yell at her and say, quit asking.
Quit asking.
I mean, dude, come on. She's not looking to fight you. She's asking a really simple question, and you're taking it like it's a reason to go. A purely professional and totally harmless and innocuous question, and one that you had to know was coming because we all did. You know, that was no more offensive than plastic or paper, sir. Oh, I think both bags can help our groceries, all right? So why do you keep trying to get me to say something that doesn't respect one of them? I'm not going to. Quit asking.
I'm not going to. So quit asking.
I mean, come on, Nick. Look, I'm not even going to get into the fact that the whole reason the quarterback situation is a topic is because this guy refuses to make a public announcement one way or the other. And that's all on him. Well, actually, I will. If you just pick one, people will stop asking which one it is. Until then, they will. So you should expect it and have a much better answer ready when that question does come, Nick. Hey, Nick, I know you think the world's out to get you, but it's not. It just wants to know who your quarterback is going to be, because as the world knows, if you have two quarterbacks, you really don't even have one if you don't pick one. So just pick one. I mean, that's not even like a hard question. That's not even a hard decision. I don't think you need to be Nick Saban, the greatest coach ever, to make that decision. That is not a hard decision, just like that's not a hard question. And something else. You got to stop right now with the, oh man, it is hilarious when Saban goes there. It is hilarious when Saban gets that red ass with the media. It's not. And it's not that I'm a member of the media. It's just that it's not funny. It's not hilarious. I mean, some losers may have thought that was funny a long time ago, but the clock has long since run out on that being so amusing. It's tired. It's played. It's lame. And the fact is, it never really was funny or cute. And it's not ornery either. The interview, and check this too, this is important. The interview was not about him protecting his players. The interview was not about him wanting to win. You know what that interview was about? The guy being a jerk. The guy being an a-hole. There's really no reason to justify that. You don't have to be a jerk to show how badly you want to win. I'll give you an example. Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr is not a jerk. And believe me, Steve Kerr wants to win as badly as Nick Saban does. Believe that. I mean, seriously, man, knock it off. You're a 66-year-old man. Act like it. Part of your job is to answer questions. And that's a really simple question. And you responded like she's punched you in the face.
Knock it off!
That was not beneath him. That wasn't unusual. That was par for the course. What would have been unusual would have been if he just actually answered the question. Man, it's such an act. It's so contrived. And if it's not, it's even worse than I thought. Yeah, I know. He reportedly reached out to Taylor and apologized, but no credit for that. That's the least he could do. And his explanation yesterday took some of the shine off of that allegedly noble act, because he did say this in part.
If I get asked to vilify a player and make another one a crown prince publicly, I might not respond to that, and I need to learn a better way to respond to that, and I will in the future.
I mean, come on, who was asking you to vilify a player? Who was asking you to vilify anybody? Who was asking you to make another one a crown prince? I mean, Nick, what the hell are you talking about? What are you talking about? That question could not have been a bigger softball. It couldn't have been more innocuous. You were asked about how your quarterbacks played. Nobody asked you to vilify anybody. You were asked how your quarterbacks played. Man, get a grip.
Get a grip.
You're the alleged greatest college coach ever. I'd even argue that you are. But you're the greatest college coach ever being asked the easiest question ever. Just answer it. Freaking do your job. Part of your job is to act like a damn professional and answer questions when they're posed to you. I saw one professional in that exchange, and it wasn't you. That's easy. That's easy. You won 51-14. You look great doing it. A reporter asked you on the sideline a throwaway question, literally. Hey, what do you think about your quarterbacks? How'd they play?
I'm not going to, so quit asking.
Quit asking? Quit asking how your quarterbacks played? Are your running backs off limits too? Can we ask you how your defense played? Reminds me, way back in the day, I did an interview with Will Clark when I got started in local radio. And he hit me with the same thing, man. Why do you ask so many negative questions? I'm like, why don't you just submit the questions ahead of time? And I'll just ask those. Way back in the day. That was way back in the day. I mean, come on, Nick, you've done this a long time. You won a lot of championships. Everybody knew that question was coming, except apparently you. Just answer it. And again, nobody asked you to vilify anybody. Nobody asked you to make one kid look bad over the other kid. The question just was very open-ended. What do you think about how your quarterbacks played?
Quit asking.
Quit asking. Quit answering like that and just answer it normally and it will go away. Or better yet, just make a decision. That's the other part of it. It's not that hard. It's very clear who the better quarterback is of those two. Nothing against Jalen Hurts. Solid guy. Great teammate. Really good quarterback, actually. But it's not like that's a hard decision to make. Broncos quarterback Case Keenum is my guest. Case, great to have you on. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jim. How are you, man?
Good, good, Case. Good to visit with you. Thanks so much. You know, you're coming off that amazing season in Minnesota, and now that you're about to start the season with a new team, I know, Case, you're looking forward and not back, but part of the book is about your journey. So when you look back on last season with the Vikings, what sticks out to you the most?
Well, there's a lot, man. And you're right. You know, there's times to look back and there's times to look forward. As the process went through, we got to write the book and just seeing everything come out on paper and, just kind of the story that's gotten me to where I am. And that's really one of the reasons why I thank the Vikings in Minnesota, you know, when I first got here to Denver. You know, it was because I got an opportunity there. That led to the dream of me being introduced by John Elway as the starting quarterback of the Denver Broncos. So it was an incredible year, incredible time. My story just going back to even childhood. But last year was, it was a lot of fun. Obviously you could point to the playoff win there. The pass to Diggs was pretty special. But, there's a lot of cool things, and hopefully to recreate a few of those here in Denver.
Case Keenum joining us. He's got a brand new book. It's out today. You know, Case, you mentioned a number of things in that answer that I could follow up on and respond to, but you write at the very start of the book, the playoff game against New Orleans and the fact that he came against Drew Brees. I know that's significant and we can get into that, but what do you remember about watching him drive the Saints for that go-ahead field goal late in the fourth quarter? As you saw that, what was going through your mind?
Well, you know, going back even to the drive before that, I going down, getting the field goal, going ahead, I thought I had my fourth quarter game-winning drive, and I came off the field, and there was still 1:30 left. And you know, with a guy like that, there's always time left for a guy like Brees to do what he does really, really, really well. So, I was sitting on the sideline like everybody in that stadium, just hoping the defense would make a stop. He just kept plowing away like Brees does. So, I think that's one thing that I've learned from great quarterbacks in this league is it's never over. You know, all you need is time and downs. So, in a 2-minute drill, but it was a great game, and I'm glad he gave us some time left too at the end of that game.
All right, so you got that extra time, and then you did what you did, and you made history. So, when you think back on that play, what comes to mind first?
Oh, yeah, there's so many emotions and things that. That happened in that moment. I think probably the biggest thing was that interview I gave afterwards. Where they asked me, Chris Myers, sideline reporter, asked me if it was the best moment of my life. And I said, honestly, it came to me just in the moment. It was in my heart. It said, this is the third best moment, behind giving my life to Christ and marrying my wife. And, if you know my wife, you know that that's true because she's an all-star. If you have a relationship with Christ like I do, I think it's true too. Not saying taking anything away from that moment, it was incredible. I mean, if you see my face, I'm absolutely going crazy, just yelling and didn't know what was happening. But man, there's more important things than what you do, and that's kind of the gist of the book. I wanted to share with people that there's more important things than these earthly things. There's things like family, family values, your faith, things that will last forever and won't ever let you down.
Case Keenum joining us. That book is out today. It's called Playing for More: Trust Beyond What You Can See. You should look for that. Case, when you sign with Denver, and that means you're signing with John Elway. You mentioned that, Case. You're signing with John Elway. As a quarterback, what does it mean to you to have John Elway, one of the greatest ever play the position, to say that you're the guy he wants to play that position?
Man, it meant a lot. I told some people that, I think when I was in like third through the fifth grade, I was John Elway with my 7 jersey for Halloween every year, like for like 4 years in a row. So to be introduced by him, to have a team like the Broncos and a general manager like Elway to come after me and say, you're our guy. We're gonna not only say that, but we're gonna back you up. We're gonna be behind you this whole way. And it's been a great fit. The city is great. Denver's an incredible place to live. The organization is awesome. This team is special, man. We got some great players, and we're excited to get on the field this weekend against Seattle.
Okay, so you go to the Broncos, which means you're gonna have to face Khalil Mack twice a year, at least until he was traded this past weekend. Listen, I know you've got a lot of respect for the Raiders and their defense, but how happy are you to see that guy go to Chicago and get out of the division?
Well, I wasn't mad when I heard the news.
Right.
Just put it that way. Great player. Obviously, incredibly talented pass rusher. We've got a great one here, too, with Von Miller, and I'm glad he's on my team now. I think the fact that I get to wear a different color jersey in practice and he just tags off is definitely an added benefit.
We're talking to Case Keenum. He's got a brand new book out, and it's out today. And Case, before I let you go, a couple of things. We mentioned Drew Brees, and the fact is you suffered a brutal knee injury in college. But 6 months before that, you happened to read Drew Brees' book, Coming Back Stronger. What was your takeaway from that book and from Drew's approach that helped you going forward?
Yeah, I don't think it was a coincidence, that I was able to read that. And part of the reason why I wrote my book is, man, if just one person gets one thing out of my book, then, man, it means a lot. As professional athletes, as quarterbacks in the NFL, we've got a lot of influence. We have a platform that, we can push whatever we want. And, I'm where I'm at today because of people before me that have taught me, that have, led me, that have encouraged me, challenged me, that have been there for me. And, that's part of why I wrote it, is I want to give back. I want to make sure I pass on the information and the knowledge and the advice that I've gotten through the years onto other people. And a book's a pretty cool way to do that.
Okay, so let's not gloss over this. I mean, I mentioned all the records that you set in college, but as you write in the book, when you first went to the Combine in Indianapolis, every player was given a schedule card, which was a list of the teams that wanted to meet with you. What was it like when you received your schedule card, and then how did that feel?
Yeah, I didn't have any meeting schedule.
None.
I got to meet with the teams there in, at the train station, kind of the informal meetings, but, nobody wanted to meet. And I assumed that maybe they just knew everything they needed to know about me. But, who knows? Who knows how that goes? The whole draft process is kind of interesting. But, going undrafted was, another challenge in my life. But, I was where I was supposed to be. Coach Kubiak gave me a chance with the Texans. And, man, I couldn't thank him enough for the opportunity. And even to come back full circle now here and working with the Broncos, Kubs upstairs and help him with some stuff. So it's been great to have that come full circle.
Yeah, but there's one moment that's so interesting. A little while after the combine, you and your brother-in-law were golfing and Gary Kubiak was there and was about to hit on the first tee. What were you feeling in that moment?
Yeah, it was actually the first time I met Coach Kubiak. We pulled up behind him on the first tee and he asked if we wanted to play through after we sat and chatted for a while, and I didn't want to hit in front of him, but my brother-in-law went ahead and he's like, "Yeah, we need to play in a hurry, so we'll go ahead." And I was probably the most nervous I've ever been standing over a golf ball. The head coach of the Houston Texans there that I wanted to go play for, watching me hit a golf ball. Luckily I didn't whiff. I actually made pretty good contact and hit a good shot. So I think it may have been a good start there to our relationship.
You know it. So last thought, I mean, here's the bottom line. You go undrafted, and then you get a call from the Texans, and they want to sign you, and that begins a journey that includes stops with the Texans, the Rams, the Texans again, the Rams again, then the Vikings, and now look where you are. Bottom line, how did you remain focused and never give up on the way to where you are right now?
That's a great question, and I think I've just had incredible people in my life, that have spoke truth to me, that have encouraged and challenged, like I said earlier. But everywhere you've been, every place you've been, all the people you've worked with and family and friends, I think that makes up kind of who you are. And really another, part of the reason why we wrote the book is, we sit there and we look through our story and just the incredible people that have been in our life. And, man, we just, we've been blessed so much by this story. We want to bless people back with it. So we're going to donate all the proceeds from the book to charities all along those communities in Houston, St. Louis, L.A., Minnesota. And it's a big part of, why we wrote the book. And so we're able to, not only be blessed, but hopefully, be a blessing to other people. So if you're, supporting us, you're supporting local charities, that we can give back.
Good for you. Case Keenum joining us. Now, the book is out. It's called Playing for More, Trust Beyond What You Can See. The book is out today. You should look for that. And as he points out, the proceeds go to charity. Case, really nice to have you on the show. Great to get caught up. I appreciate you, and I appreciate that conversation. Good luck with everything.
Hey, thanks, Jim. Always a pleasure being on the show, man. Appreciate it.
We go to Kuwait. Mike, what's going on, brother?
That's smack. Thanks for taking the call. But hey, look, the vine's a little weak, but having said that, it's probably still better than the phone booth I used to use back in the day at West LA College. Now, first of all, if the clones are blowing up my Twitter feed, they're inquiring on my health and welfare. You know, Khalil Mack is a generational player, but just today, Jim, I watched a platoon of kids loaded for bear hop on one of my airplanes and take off downrange. So right about now, perspective on life is just a little bit different, but I do have a couple of takes. First of all, when John Gruden was asked months ago about Khalil Mack and his holdout, his first answer was the Raiders defense, it wasn't very good with him last year anyways. That was a telling comment. This isn't about the money. Well, yeah, it is about the money, but this is about John Gruden. The Raiders, Jim, the Raiders had all the leverage here with this fifth-year contract. There's no way Mack sits out this season, not making $14 million. That's $800,000 a game. You know, and there was suspicion that he was going to come in last Sunday. You ask any Raider fan about draft picks, any Raider fan, and those draft picks we got from Tampa for Gruden in 2002 were not worth it. They'd say no way because we win that Super Bowl with Gruden, but still, it's not about winning now with Mack, even having him under the franchise tag for 3 more years. This is about Chucky not wanting to pay a defensive player QB money. Because right now, with this trade, the Raiders are basically saying to the world, they're not willing to pay great players. You know, beat writer Levi Damian, he said it best. He said, the Raiders, they got a hold of a lottery ticket, they scratched it off, and they struck the mother freaking load. Then Gruden grabs it, goes back in the store, and exchanges it for a couple of more tickets. I get that no NFL team is paying two players this much money. But this is Khalil freaking Mack. He is our closer. You know, they should have held the course. He would have reported, I know it. They could have gotten him in, taken another shot. You know, Vance Mack, this is my lot as a Raider fan. Pro Bowlers ride the bench. Incomplete passes are called immaculate receptions. Fumbles are tucks, and superstars get traded. Now the Raiders truly are a Vegas team because every time I take a trip to Vegas, I have no plan. I lose my ass, and I haven't a freaking clue how it happened. But, you know, like I said, as Raider fans, we have and we still will go on. Jim, I'll be back in a couple months. I'll get my regular spot in rotation back. That's all I got for now.
Raider Mike. All right, so a couple of thoughts. Number one, rack him. Mike, nice job. Godspeed. The clones are concerned about you. They are thinking about you, and I'm glad they're blowing you up on your Twitter feed to let you know just that. Raider Mike.
Good night now!